afternoon. I hope you can hear me. I'd like to start by acknowledging two of my co-authors in the audience, Donna Kaplan and Laura LaRocca, and they're going to take all the really difficult questions. Okay? Just so you know. Okay. So I'm going to talk with you today. I'm going to describe and compare two public health systems and how those public health systems deal with public health crises. Using Wilson's theory of bureaucracies, James Wilson. I have no disclosures to make with regard to this presentation. So first of all, a group of public health students from the University of Hartford traveled to Toronto, Canada. These are master's students in public health, traveled to Toronto, Canada to learn about public health systems there. So why would we bother to travel in public health? Well, clearly public health is a global issue. As Dr. Gerberding from the Centers for Disease Control says, a threat anywhere is a threat everywhere, and it behooves us to know what goes on in other places. It's a great learning opportunity for our master's students in order to compare and contrast public health and acute healthcare systems. And it's a wonderful way to improve collaborations. We've developed a wonderful working relationship with Toronto Public Health since embarking on this journey. So I'm going to describe, first of all, briefly, Canada's public health system. During the time of SARS, which is what I'm going to be talking about mostly, I'm going to be comparing the SARS outbreak in Toronto with a TB outbreak that we had in Connecticut and how those crises were dealt with. So at the federal level, at the time of SARS, there was Health Canada, and underneath that was the Population and Public Health Branch. And then underneath that, this looks very similar to our system in terms of structure, was the provincial level, which is the Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. And then underneath that are 36 local boards of health across the province. Ontario is a province of about 12.5 million people. One of those local boards of health is Toronto Public Health. And this looks familiar to everyone. We have at the federal level here the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. At the state level is the Connecticut Department of Public Health, which is part of what I'm going to be talking about. In Connecticut, what you may not know is that we have 80 local health departments in Connecticut for a rather small state of about 3.5 million people. It's a lot, right? This is just a snapshot of the nursing workforce and the number of local health departments in Ontario and Canada. What I want to point out here is that in total, nurses comprise about 37.5% of nurses in Toronto Public Health. In Connecticut, nurses comprise about 11% of the nursing workforce within Connecticut State Department of Public Health. And there were about 397 nurses working in the 80 local health districts across the state during the time of the TB outbreak that I'm discussing. The LHD that I'm studying here, the local health district, has one nurse whose duties are only part-time for disease surveillance. The rest of the time she does emergency preparedness. And I'm going to come back to this later to make some more comparisons. So I'm going to briefly describe what happened SARS in Toronto. Probably most of you know this already. On March 5th, 2003, a woman who had traveled to Hong Kong became ill and died with the first case of SARS in Toronto. Her son died 8 days later, and subsequently a number of people who were exposed to the son also became ill. And by March 26th, the Premier of Ontario had declared SARS a provincial emergency. This meant that hospitals had to eliminate all non-essential services, set up isolation wards for potential SARS cases, and reduce hospital visitation. And concurrently, the Toronto Public Health System was trying to deal with the SARS outbreak. The federal government actually did send some specialists to Toronto to help deal with the outbreak. Many of Toronto public health officials weren't even there, weren't even aware that the federal officials were there. The Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care told Toronto Public Health, "We have no resources to give you in terms of human resources. Do whatever it takes to get SARS under control, and we'll take care of it later. We'll reimburse you after the fact." So by the time the SARS crisis was over, Toronto Public Health had dealt with 220 cases of SARS, probable or suspect cases, made almost 2,000 investigations of SARS, and were responsible for managing and overseeing the quarantine of 14,000 people in that city. So what they did, I just want to go back for a moment. What they did in Toronto, this is what's the crux of the presentation, is they really did a bottom-up approach. They took what resources they had, they redeployed people, and they dealt with this crisis from the bottom up. It was really a bottom-up approach to dealing with SARS. In contrast, I'm going to talk now about the tuberculosis outbreak that happened in Connecticut in 2006. There was an outbreak of 8 secondary TB cases in Connecticut. The source case was a highly infectious tuberculosis, and there were many contacts that had to be followed up, including 700 incarcerated individuals, 117 who were known to have HIV. The affected health district, as I said before, employed one public health nurse, and there was no way that she could deal with this issue. So she contacted, or the director of the local health district contacted DPH, Connecticut Department of Public Health, and asked for assistance. Connecticut Department of Public Health didn't have much to give in the way of assistance, so then contacted the CDC. Eventually, what happened is that the CDC dealt with this contact investigation. It was too arduous. The state and the local officials didn't have the capacity to deal with it. Essentially, it was dealt with from the top down. So I'm going to start with some comparisons, and I'm going to use James Q. Wilson's description of bureaucracies to start this. So what he says is that the bureaucracies within a parliamentary regime, such as Canada has, tend to be more flexible, they're not punitive, and they're accommodating. And in a presidential regime, which is what we operate under here in this country, bureaucracies tend to be more rigid and punitive and legalistic. And I don't know about you, but when the state comes to our facility, we're very frightened. So his argument is that in a parliamentary regime, there's very little time for special interests to become involved. Time between elections, from the time an election is called until it happens, is anywhere from 30 to 60 days. Not a lot can happen. Special interests aren't as involved. Under a presidential regime, we all know what's happening now. But also, because there's so much scrutiny in a presidential regime, there's less opportunity for bureaucrats to do what it is that they need to do in terms of doing the right thing. So a national case in point, of course, is Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. The federal government waited for the state, which waited for local officials to tell them what to do. There was a lot of holdup in terms of, we knew what the right thing to do was, but people were being held up by the laws, which the IOM says are very antiquated and not effective. So we really need to work on those. So those are the two differences in terms of the political context. Now I just want to talk briefly about the cultural context too. In Canada, researchers talk about it as being more of a communitarian culture, where equity, trust of government entities, and fairness are more prevalent. So in the U.S., it's much more of an individualistic culture, market-driven, and there's more distrust of government entities. So we still operate with primarily a market-driven healthcare system here. In Canada, of course, it's a universal healthcare system that is run by the provinces. So there's this difference also in terms of the cultural context. We were trying to explain why the top-down versus the bottom-up approach. And these are two ways that we found that helps to explain what happened during the SARS outbreak in Toronto and the TB outbreak in Connecticut. So what are the observations that we've made? Well, first of all, leadership is critical during any kind of a public health crisis. One of the criticisms that happened during the SARS outbreak is that nobody really knew who the leader was. The federal government, the provincial government, and Toronto Public Health all had a different voice. And so that was really quite counterproductive at worst. It was not helpful. Whereas in this country, we have the CDC that would typically deal with such an event and would be the single voice for public health. It's really important during a crisis that we be accommodating. This is stretching or bending the laws, which they had to do in Canada. They had to just do what had to be done. There really wasn't a lot of time or choice in that matter. It's really important in times of uncertainty to be flexible. Toronto Public Health deployed all of the 750 nurses that they had to do jobs that needed to be done. They were taken off of the programs that were not essential, and they worked on the SARS epidemic. They were on hotlines. They were following up with the quarantined patients. They were doing all of the things that needed to be done. And the last thing is that public health capacity in both countries during times of a crisis is very likely to be stretched and will probably be insufficient, as was shown in certainly in Connecticut. I would just want to go back to this table for just a moment to show you some comparisons. So in Connecticut, for example, we have a good deal more in terms of local health districts. We have, if you look at this, is per population per 100,000. In Toronto and Ontario, the province of Ontario, there's significantly less. On the other hand, the number of RNs is pretty comparable in Ontario and Connecticut, a little bit lower in Toronto. Toronto is Canada's largest city of 2.5 million people. But if you look at in terms of the public health nursing workforce, there's almost twice the number of public health nurses working in Toronto and Ontario versus Connecticut, and certainly the local health district that we were talking about for the TB outbreak here. So the lessons that we learned from this experience, which was pretty extraordinary, is that flexibility and authority have to be balanced with each other. You need to have a voice of authority. You have to be flexible in dealing with a public health crisis. We have to think about the community, but we also have to think about individual rights versus the community. So, for example, it's not clear in this country how well laws like quarantine and so on would work. We talk about mandatory evacuation, you know, if you want to. So it's not clear that that community and individual are balanced all the time. And it's really critical to build public health workforce, particularly at the local level, because that's where public health happens. And finally, it's really important to share knowledge and create alliances, because public health is a global issue. That's it.
Okay, now we have some time for questions. So who would like to be first? Okay, in the back.
I just want to actually make a comment. This time the SARS outbreak started in Canada. I just got appointed as the director of public health in Wayne County, Michigan. Now, if anybody knows the Wayne County, Michigan, we are right on the border, Windsor border, where we have the trade agreement with, you know, Canada. We also have a large number of nurses that come from Canada to our Henry Ford Hospital. So I was prompted to be on TV and just, you know, explain what SARS is, how we're going to control it, and all this. Speaking of special interest groups, I was shocked at that first conference that I did, media conference, how many of the businesses actually send us questions and threaten to sue us in terms of when you're scaring people, that now communication between the borders in terms of the trucks bringing sludge and all this. Even when I got actually questions or threats from the nursing community, because nurses who were already upset having Canadian nurses come and work in Detroit started saying, well, you've got to stop nurses to come in. What if they, you know, bring the SARS disease to us? So there is quite a bit. Eventually, after years, we was on the border health, you know, agreements, and then public health started being involved with Canadian health departments to make sure that this kind of crisis doesn't happen. But it was very interesting for me to see how we responded versus how Canadians responded on the other side. That we were very legalistic, we want to make sure nobody was going to sue us. People were very verbal, communities were up in roll, they didn't want any of the chemical waste that we used to receive from Canada to be brought in. I mean, you had umpteen kinds of concerns and complaints. So it makes, because of our culture, it makes it extremely difficult to deal with a crisis situation as such, because it took us months of, you know, damage control with the communities and actually even with the health community. So it gives you an example as to how difficult it is to work.
Sounds like your experience pretty much parallels what our speaker was saying in terms of the legalistic, you know, top-down and punitive and all. Good point. Other questions? I had another hand in the back. Is this about the simulation also?
Yeah. Uh-huh. How much does it cost? Because I know simulation costs.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, Kate can actually help us out. How much does it cost?
Right. Because these things cost a lot of money. So.
Well, actually, we did receive a HRSA grant for it, so we do have some funding for it. And it is expensive to have the standardized patient because we have to pay for actors to come and to do that. So that's a little bit of the pricey situation. For cost-wise, once you develop the scenarios and once we have it developed, we can reuse it. And so that's like a reusable kind of one-time investment. So the monies that we received from the grant helped develop the scenarios and provided us to have, the actors come. Standardized patients, on the other hand, we did receive money from that. We are looking at other alternative ways after the grant is gone to help fund that experience because it is we found it as one of our, really a worthwhile experience.
About 20 to 30 minutes for about 40 students is about $4,200.
It's very expensive.
Yeah, and there's a lot. It depends upon, it's in each course. In each course, say I teach mental health, community mental health nursing. And in my particular course, I have John Tallchief. Say if they're starting off and they're doing their assessment course, they have this interaction with Viola Ayers. And they're given, their particular assignment is to do a complete health history. Now, we also have a variety of assignment scenarios which entail,
she
knows it all.
We have about 15 that are static up on the line.
Yeah.
So if the student asks a question it's sort of pre-programmed so that
right.
The person doesn't know what they're talking about, is that what you meant?
Well, it's based on a lexicon kind of system where there's keywords that would trigger a response. So the student has to ask a question about do you want to commit suicide or if do you have injury to self. And based on those keywords, they would elicit a particular clip. Okay, and if it doesn't match, the guy would say, I don't understand what you're talking about, or would do something like, and then the student's going, shoot, I asked the wrong question. This is not how I'm supposed to phrase it. So this helps them phrase the questioning, and it actually helps them with completing, like my assignment was the mental status exam, so they had to ask all of these particular questions.
All right, have you thought of marketing
now? Yeah. My boss. Did you like that? See, if you like that, just we'll follow up with us later.
Take her card.
Yes.
We're right now writing another Mercy Grant to take this and make it user friendly. Right now, I have to have our instructional designers make the changes. Now we're trying to develop a platform so that Joe or Susie Nurse can type in, make the changes, and it'll function. That's the next thing.
It's very labor-intensive, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a lot of work that takes on.
That's my question. I mean, if it is developed with versus dollars, I'm wondering how we can, you know, better share and disseminate this type of a product that's being, you know, developed under HRSA.
That's what we're trying to do. At
yeah.
this point in time, it is not something that, it's very specialized to her course, and that was poor, not good thinking on our part. But now we realize
right.
we need to make a user-friendly platform.
And that's what we're in the midst of doing now, is trying to translate that so that you can use it, I can use it, we all can use it. But right now it's specialized to my course because when we designed it for our particular students doing this particular assignment. We know that it works. We just have to now make it user-friendly so that the lexicons and all the things that, and I'm not really versed on the technological stuff. I'm more of a talky kind of interactive person. And so I don't know if how that matches up, you know, and that's the part we're working on it. But I have to tell you, it's a really a nice, we have seen great progress with our students with that.
Is there a question over here?
Somebody else can talk. Yeah.
Different professional schools that have contact with these kind of patients need to become very comfortable talking with these patients.
And
That's
exactly right. And we actually use the standardized patient from the Eastern Virginia Medical School who use these patients. And we actually learned it from them, and we were able to have a collaboration with them. And then we said, hey, they're doing it. You know, medical students actually do a lot of standardized patients. I don't know if you know the literature out there. But they use standardized patients for their practicum, and they actually to pass courses, et cetera. And these actors are actually trained and go through extensive training in how to evaluate the student, either be a medical student or a nursing student. In our particular case, I had to give them what we were looking for in terms of the one-to-one interaction, what kind of questions that we were asking. They already knew they had a course on how to portray a patient without being overly invested or making it too wild so that the students wouldn't get it. But and I'll show how to debrief with the student. So we actually took this from the medical school.
This was my question. My name is Rita Rams. I'm at Langston University in Langston, Oklahoma, and I actually coordinate our psychosocial and pediatric rotation.
Oh.
And so when you have the actors, because even though you have
John Tallchief,
even though he's Native American,
right.
his answer to me seemed very Westernized.
Well, actually, this is
We went because we have students in Arizona. We used Yavapai Nation, and we had focus groups with individuals from the Yavapai Nation, and they're the ones that gave us our responses.
You didn't see the actual clips because they actually had different. It seemed very generic. We tried to put the clip in there, but it wasn't working for us, and I didn't want to. I can't even run the mouse up here, let alone that, you know. Right. Right. And then that shows in our particular response. And this is a bigger project. We actually have an advisory board from different all of the different cultures that we're trying to capture in our program. And also we have focus groups with each of these particular you know, cultural groups. And based on what the focus group said, we were able to write our particular scenarios. And then we also brought it in front of the advisory board, who critiqued it and then gave us, you know, yes or no. I did the psych piece because I know that piece for the nurse, but I don't know the cultural piece, and so that's where we got it from. So it's actually a huge presentation that will take us forever. Yes.
We're here new with this simulation.
Okay. Right.
And it's been amazing how well they've done. And they give some credit for it in their own school.
Right.
And they're excellent.
We were thinking about...
We
were thinking about doing that, but since we had this relationship already with the EVMS, and the most important thing is what we had with the patients is that they were already were experienced. They go through a rigorous kind of training and to be objective and not to be, and of course they want to be making a learning type of environment for them, and sometimes peer on peer, the student on students wasn't very cohesive for a learning experience. So we had that opportunity, and we were very fortunate with the standardized patient. Very professional, able to debrief, gave positive feedback, also, you know, told them the negative parts about it. Now, the standardized patient was not necessarily culturally sensitive to the African American or the Native American. It was just this a variety of people that we could get, the actors, because there's not that many Native Americans out there that are willing to be standardized patients for our community. So we did take, different ethnic groups if we could and cultural groups, but it was kind of hard for us when you had that many students to process at a time. And I'm sorry for taking up all your time here.
Other questions before we wrap up? Another minute or two, I think. Well, certainly feel free to continue the discussion out in the hallway.
Yeah.
couple of them, and they come to make problems. Right.
So what is happening?
Because he was looking at simulations,
and I know
we're not reflecting the workforce.
I am from my employee international.
There are
what I've been
doing.
So now I'm leading the board that's
over me.
Canada, right now.
But I am finishing translation.
I am very, we were very interested to see the cost
of the online
family.
It's extremely expensive.
Wait, like it matters.
Yeah, take your glasses off.
I can't see. Oh, do I have my glasses on? No. That's perfect. And, and in conclusion, it's happy hour now. All right. All right, am I supposed to be looking at you? Okay. There you go. Thank you.
Let me step back across the circle for a second.
All right.
One more step down.
Right there.
Oh, thanks for your participation. We can't wait till next step. We're going to be back in...